It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We finally brought justice to a man that beheaded the three Americans, two journalists and a humanitarian worker. One of the things that General Milley did is General Milley named the operation, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, named the operation that took down al-Baghdadi after Kayla Mueller, after what she'd suffered. And that was something that that people should know. But justice was brought to those Americans who were so brutally killed.
That was Ambassador Robert O'Brien this morning on Fox and Friends. And, of course, he's talking about the takedown of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. If you haven't heard about this, it is the biggest news of the weekend. It is the biggest news of the world. It was an incredible incident. Let me tell you about Baghdadi before I let you hear what the president had to say about it in case you missed it. Now, the ambassador was talking about Kayla Mueller. And just to remind you, she was 24 years old. She was kidnapped outside a hospital. She was a Christian. I don't know much about Kayla, so she was a Christian by others' description. Whether she was an evangelical missionary, I don't know. So I just want to distinguish. I honestly don't know. I know that according to sources, she refused to give up her faith. She refused to announce it after ISIS captured her. She was repeatedly raped by Abu Bakr Baghdadi. And of course, then she was killed in some sort of an overhead attempt, I think, by American forces to take out ISIS. So it's a very sad situation. Her mother this morning is praising President Trump and saying that if President Obama had more courage, had taken more decisive action, maybe Kayla's life might have been spared. But to the issue of Baghdadi, let me just give you background. There was a $25 million bounty on his head placed by the Americans. He has been the leader of ISIS, the person that everyone looked to in ISIS to make the plans. And he's described as someone who was directly involved in atrocity and human rights violations, genocide of Yazidis in Iraq, sex slavery, organized rape, floggings, systematic executions. He directed terrorist activities and massacres. He embraced brutality as part of the organization's propaganda efforts, producing videos displaying mass crucifixion, sex slavery, and executions via hacking, stoning, and burning. That gives you an idea of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. And I think this will put in context the somberness of President Trump as he took the podium yesterday morning early at the White House and said this. Let's listen.
Last night, the United States brought the world's number one terrorist leader to justice. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is dead. He was the founder and leader of ISIS, the most ruthless and violent terror organization anywhere in the world. The United States has been searching for Baghdadi for many years. Capturing or killing Baghdadi has been the top national security priority of my administration. U.S. Special Operations Forces executed a dangerous and daring nighttime raid in northwestern Syria and accomplished their mission in grand style. The U.S. personnel were incredible. I got to watch much of it. No personnel were lost in the operation, while a large number of Baghdadi's fighters and companions were killed with him. He died after running into a dead-end tunnel, whimpering and crying and screaming all the way. The compound had been cleared by this time, with people either surrendering or being shot and killed. 11 young children were moved out of the house and are uninjured. The only ones remaining were Baghdadi in the tunnel, and he had dragged three of his young children with him. They were led to certain death. He reached the end of the tunnel as our dogs chased him down. He ignited his vest, killing himself and the three children. His body was mutilated by the blast. The tunnel had caved in on it in addition. But test results gave certain, immediate, and totally positive identification. It was him. The thug who tried so hard to intimidate others spent his last moments in utter fear, in total panic and dread, terrified of the American forces bearing down on him. We were in the compound for approximately 2 hours, and after the mission was accomplished, we took highly sensitive material and information from the raid, much having to do with ISIS, origins, future plans, things that we very much want. Baghdadi's demise demonstrates America's relentless pursuit of terrorist leaders and our commitment to the enduring and total defeat of ISIS and other terrorist organizations.
Well, that's exactly what the president said yesterday. And boy, if you have not seen that, you should look that up on your search engine. I've never seen the president look more sober, and for good reasons. He also, of course, watched it. Can you imagine watching that? And can you imagine the technology required? And this is not the first time, of course. We know that the killing of bin Laden was observed by many people in the Situation Room. In fact, there was an article by Amr Madani, who has a picture of the Situation Room with the president and Mike Pence and Espy. I'll give you the names here. It's a couple of the generals, and it's Mike Espy, who is the national security advisor now. As they are watching this, there's only six. Well, there are six of them. They're dressed. You know, the president is in a suit, so is Mike Pence, and the generals have their uniforms on, and they look, I have to say, they look as sober as you would think men would look while watching something like this play out. And the Madani, in his article, contrasts that picture with the one of the staff of Obama watching the killing of bin Laden, and how the room was packed, and the president was, you know, dressed in his tennis or golf clothing, kind of knee. Remember, he was on his knees by someone's chair. It was just a very contrasting photo. But can you imagine watching something like that play out? I can't imagine it. And I think that probably explains the look on the president's face when he came to the podium, and the sobriety of Mike Pence's face in this picture. I just think we should post this article, Situation Room, two photos capture vastly different presidents. But I'm really not trying to, I am making a political statement about Obama, but really that's not the important thing to me. I just think this is a moment in which we just take pause. Because what we're dealing with right now, internationally and nationally, really is a matter of life and death here on this earth and the next, and the next life as well. And so this is a very sobering time, and it's not a small thing when a man is killed and when his children are killed. Can you imagine him taking his children as shields, knowing he's going to be killed? I just can't imagine that. And that is what they were watching, and that's how wicked this is. So much of what I mean by this, I'm talking about ISIS in particular right now, in Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi in particular. In that Situation Room was Robert O'Brien, Secretary of Defense Mark Esper, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Mark Milley, who you heard the ambassador mention, and General Marcus Evans. And you heard the ambassador say that they named the operation, the Special Forces went in, they named it after Kayla Mueller, in her honor of how she was treated by al-Baghdadi in the last days of her life. It's just an amazing thing. The president said he died like a dog, he died like a coward. The world is now a much safer place. One of the things I think of when I think of Baghdadi, this may be a very limited memory of him, but I just remember that he was the inspiration for the 9/11 Benghazi attacks. I'll never forget that. All the many millions of other things that he was responsible for, he was certainly responsible for that day. And so this is justice. There's no question about it. This is justice. Now, of course, the political part of this all comes in, and it came in with a long press conference that the president held after he made the statement, and he was asked a question, and he answered it. This is clip two.
And have you notified the congressional leaders about this, Pelosi? We've notified some. Others are being notified now as I speak. We were going to notify them last night, but we decided not to do that because Washington leaks like I've never seen before. There's nothing, there's no country in the world that leaks like we do. And Washington is a leaking machine. And I told my people we will not notify them until our great people are out, not just in, but out. I don't want to have them greeted with fire peril like you wouldn't believe. So we were able to get in. It was top secret. It was kept. There were no leaks, no nothing. The only people that knew were the few people that I dealt with. And again, Mark Milley and the Joint Chiefs of Staff were incredible. We had some tremendous backup. Robert O'Brien, Secretary Esper, Secretary Pompeo, Pence, I told you, he was great. This is a very small group of people that knew about this. We had very, very few people. A leak could have caused the death of all of them. Now, they're so good that I think nothing was going to stop them anyway. You want to know the truth. That's how good they were. We had them also surrounded by massive air power up in the air yesterday, surrounded at very high levels. We were very low. We had tremendous air power.
And you watched all this from the SIT room? Who were you with in the SIT room when you watched this?
Secretary Esper, a few of the Joint Chiefs, Mark Milley, some generals. We had some very great military people in that room. And we had some great intelligence people, Robert O'Brien.
Yeah, so that's the partial answer. But, of course, Nancy Pelosi was not happy about this. I can understand why she wasn't happy. I could also understand why the president didn't let her know, or Adam Schiff, who is also not happy. You know, he's the head of the House Intelligence Committee. Is that a joke or what? The one that leaks to the press all the time, that lies under oath, that presents fake readings of letters by the president to his committee. It's just amazing. So he was not informed. For good reason, and Pelosi was not informed, too. Her response was to congratulate the dedication and skill of our military and our intelligence professionals, and then lamented that the Russians, but not top congressional leadership, were notified in advance. And it's true, the Russians were notified, as were the Turks. The reason for that was that there's a lot of tension in that region, as you well know. This is northwestern Syria, and they let, I think, the Russians, my understanding is that they let the Russians and Turks know that there was going to be something big taking place, and that American air power was going to come in. But please don't shoot us down. We're not coming after you. We are engaging in something very important. And they stood down and allowed it to take place, even though they, according to reports, did not really know what was taking place. It's just interesting, and that's how it went down on Saturday night. They've been planning this raid for about 3 weeks, which is pretty amazing, isn't it? The Washington Post did something really bizarre. Their headline referred to al-Bakr al-Baghdadi as an austere religious scholar at the helm of the Islamic State. They changed their headline twice, and they ended up, after all the criticism, calling him the Islamic State's terrorist in chief instead of an austere religious scholar. So the Washington Post and, of course, others will be spinning this, you know, in various ways because they don't dare criticize, even with someone as wicked as Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. They don't dare criticize in the way that they should. I don't know. Yeah, we know why. Because they have mixed loyalties and they have mixed staff in terms of their loyalties. All right. Lots of news. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Athletics and life teach us common benefits. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. Whether you're working on that golf game or improving your average on the baseball field, you can learn life lessons. But more importantly, you can learn spiritual lessons. 1 Corinthians 9:24 says, "Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize." Jesus Christ gave his life on the cross just so that you can have a personal relationship with him. Receive Jesus Christ now as your Lord and Savior and enjoy the ultimate prize of eternal life. Then you can do what Hebrews 12:1 says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us." A message from American Family Radio.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance each day to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Robert Wilkie, Secretary of Veterans Affairs. His department oversees matters concerning veterans benefits, health care, and national veterans memorials and cemeteries. Joshua 1:9 reminds us of the Lord's blessings of courage for our soldiers. "Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be frightened and do not be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for Robert Wilkie as he works on behalf of America's veterans and their families. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University is training students to love the Lord, love the Word, love the church, and love the lost. Scripture is the foundation for everything they do. It's who they are, preparing students not just for career, but to fulfill God's high calling on their lives. Truett McConnell University offers a wide array of bachelor's programs, some online, and they also have an outstanding Master of Arts in Theology. So if you'd like to schedule a visit to Truett's campus in the North Georgia Mountains, visit truett.edu.
We've got a big problem in this nation, folks, and it has nothing to do with President Trump. As a matter of fact, he's the one trying to stop the big problem from getting even bigger, and that problem is socialism. There are efforts underway at this very moment to attack free speech and freedom of religion. You cannot have a socialist regime if you have free speech. That's why the left is silencing dissent. But perhaps the most nefarious scheme is to neutralize the churches. George Soros-funded organizations are well on their way to doing just that. The warning signs are there. Some of the nation's largest and most conservative religious denominations have been overrun by social justice and identity politics. That's why I wrote Culture Jihad, How to Stop the Left from Killing a Nation. It's a wake-up call to freedom-loving patriots. If we don't take a stand, we will lose the country. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
And if we saw the launch of the Russian investigation, what do you make of this?
Well, I'm very curious since presumably I guess I'm one of those under investigation. And
and you just heard about this.
Yes, I just read the clip on about 20 minutes ago. I found the timing interesting, given the increasing heat around the impeachment inquiry, and so the timing's interesting. I'll just let it go at that. And the other thing I wonder about is whether we're talking about the overall investigation of the Russian. Reporting on the Russian interference, or are we talking about the counterintelligence investigation that was launched in July by the FBI about potential engagement and collusion, whatever you want to call it, between the Russians and the Trump campaign? So,
what
is the alleged criminal activity that prompted this?
Do you have any idea, what they might think may rise to the level of a criminal offense?
No, I don't. That's obviously an item of great interest to me. What is it that any of us did that would rise the level of a criminal infraction? Well, and I just don't know.
He does know. Trust me, he does know. That's James Clapper. And James, of course, was working with John Brennan. From all accounts, John Brennan, the former head of the CIA under Barack Obama. And here's the story. This is the other big story, because there are many. There are at least three major stories I want to share with you this morning. One is, of course, the killing of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. But the other is this, and that in the last few days, the investigation of William Barr into the FISA abuse has turned into not just some kind of an inquiry, but and not just a report from an inspector general, but a criminal investigation. That's huge. That means that they believe that criminal activity took place probably within leadership, within the FBI, within these the deep state, as we call it, and they are actually going to be issuing indictments and bringing charges if they can find enough evidence, then they probably have, or they would never have said criminal, against people like James Clapper for their part in setting up President Trump and the people around him in lying to the American people and using resources of the United States government against Americans, turning the powers of our federal government against individuals. It's just amazing. Abusing the FISA court. These are all the things that these are all the allegations that are floating around. And by the way, Michael Horowitz now is, again, okay, yeah, how many times have I said this or have you heard this? The report that he is preparing is supposed to be, according to his report to congressional leaders, very lengthy, and it has very few redactions. And that's what he has reported to Congress, and it's going to be made public within a short order. I heard the congressman from Texas say with Mario Bartiromo a couple of days ago, his name escapes me. I've got a lot of names to juggle this morning. But he was saying that it's not a coincidence that this report is coming out at the same time that William Barr is announcing that this is a criminal. This has moved into a criminal investigation. Let that soak in. And that's why James Clapper is, you know, I didn't know. I mean, this is the first I've heard about it. Just Chris Cuomo. I don't know what it is we might have done. I can't imagine. And so you'll want to know, of course, who else is kind of under the suspicion now of maybe having done something criminal, and the name Andrew McCabe comes up. He also appeared with Andrew Cuomo. Of course, McCabe is a CNN contributor, and this is what their interaction sounded like.
Listen, this is, there's some questions here, and they're offering a deal. We think this was inconsistent. We call it lack of candor. Now it's going to be a perjury charge. We believe he gave false information, 1001, whatever they want to put you under. You didn't tell the truth. We got you on it. They offer you a deal. Will you take a deal in order to go on with the rest of your life if there is no big criminal attachment? You don't have to do any time or anything like that.
Absolutely not. Under any
circumstances. No deal.
Absolutely not, under any circumstances. Chris, I have said to you, I said from the very beginning, I absolutely reject that report because I never intentionally misled anyone about anything. And I will not stand up and claim that I've done something that I didn't do. So it won't happen.
And the political stick will be no one is above the law. And you're going after the president, the Democrats, they would argue the FBI, that he lacked candor also. That he would not tell the truth. He wouldn't answer questions, and you have to go after people that way. Why doesn't that apply to you?
The law applies to me in the same way that it does to every other American, and certainly including the president as well. The inspector general made a referral to the U.S. Attorney's Office. They have investigated, I assume, thoroughly. We haven't heard what the status of that investigation is. As I said, if they follow the facts and they follow the law, I am confident that nothing will come of it.
Yeah, he's confident nothing will come of it. As a matter of fact, I'm reading that John Durham offered Andrew McCabe an indictment plea agreement, but he turned it down. So he thinks he's just completely innocent, has nothing to worry about. And that echoes kind of what James Comey said. He was interviewed in a long-form interview by Nicole Wallace on a stage for some event. And actually, I want to play a couple of clips from this, but I want you to hear his response directly to how he feels about this Barr investigation, clip 7.
And the most important way he can do that is give us transparency. I'm not worried about a single thing in connection with any of the matters under investigation. Gather the facts, write a report and share it with the American people. Please do that. Because all this stuff in the media with the Attorney General saying stuff doesn't just jibe is an attack on the integrity of the institution, which he is supposed to be leading. The way to protect that is show the folks the facts. Lay it out. Don't drip it out. Don't leak it out. Give it out. And I'm confident that when the American people see the picture of why we did what we did, their confidence in the institution will be maintained, restored, and protected.
Now, I'm stunned because I'm going to tell you something else in a second that sort of contradicts that narrative. James Comey keeps telling us how moral and upright he is and how he's done nothing. Andrew McCabe, the same thing. And yet, Sidney Powell, who's defending Lieutenant General Flynn, has laid out, that was the third thing I wanted to tell you about today for sure. She is demanding that the charges be dismissed against Lieutenant General Flynn for outrageous government misconduct. And I'm going to get to that in just a second, except that I want to preface that by telling you another big thing happened in the last few days. James Baker, who was the chief legal counsel, the FBI general counsel, when all this took place, who has a huge cloud over himself for the things that he has done. This is the FBI general counsel under James Comey, working with Andrew McCabe. This is the guy. Guess what? He's just flipped. He's going to be working with William Barr and John Durham on this investigation. That's got to shake. I don't know if they knew that before they said the things they said a few minutes ago, that James Baker was going to flip. I don't know if they knew that, but this is huge. This is a huge story. I'll read Shannon Bream's tweet when it happened. New York Times reports that DOJ Durham probe has shifted from an administrative review of the Russian investigation to a criminal inquiry, which we just said. Wall Street Journal also now reporting that the change in status gives investigators ability to subpoena witnesses and use grand jury. And then, of course, this is dated October 25th, so James Baker has flipped, and now he's going to be cooperating with the investigators. And why do I – so James Comey's so smug about this. We did nothing. And just let the truth be known. Let it all be known. I'm confident the American people will, you know, come to the defense, will understand what a noble person I was and Andrew McCabe was and Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and you fill in the blanks, James Baker and the others. If they just know everything. So here's everything, at least part of it. I'll tell you one story. And I'm going to get into some length here. This is an article by the Daily Caller by Luke Rosiak, who's been a frequent guest of ours. Luke is a great reporter, so you're going to have to allow me. I want to read a lot of this to you. And we're going to put this on our Facebook page. It's called Michael Flynn Attorney Demands Charges Be Dismissed for Outrageous Government Misconduct. And this is how it goes. I'll read you the bullet points first. Attorney Sidney Powell on Thursday asked a federal court to hold prosecutors in contempt for their conduct in the case against former Trump National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. Remember, Michael Flynn supported the president in his campaign, went with him all to all these rallies, and he was the one that was set up, and I'll make that case in this filing by Sidney Powell, who has been our guest on more than one occasion, of how General Flynn was set up. But now we have more detail about it, which Sidney provides in this request to dismiss the charges. She said the government withheld evidence of misconduct in the FBI, including the infamous Peter Strzok Lisa Page texts, until one day after he pleaded guilty in December 2017. And that contemporaneous notes from Flynn's interview with Strzok contradict Strzok's final report. Sidney Powell wrote that Pentagon official James Baker, this is a different James Baker, this is a Pentagon James Baker, not the FBI James Baker. Pentagon official James Baker may be behind the illegal leak to the Washington Post of a transcript of a call with Russian ambassador, with James Clapper allegedly telling David Ignatius to take a kill shot. Now, what he's saying is, what she's saying is that it looks as though the Pentagon official James Baker probably leaked that call of General Flynn with the Russian ambassador, and then James Clapper told the Washington Post reporter David Ignatius, who reported it, to take a kill shot on General Flynn. You know what that means? Of course you know. Anybody in the military knows that's put him out, like the final blow. Let's end this. Let's get him out. Let's figuratively kill him and stop this whole thing. Let's stop harassing him. Let's just put him out of business forever. And now here are the details. Former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn's attorney said in a court filing Thursday that the case against her client should be dismissed for outrageous government misconduct, and that the court should issue an order to show cause why the prosecutor should not be held in contempt. And these are the things that she wrote. FBI agent Peter Strzok changed his interview notes to purport that Flynn said things he did not say. Number two, that a Pentagon official may have leaked evidence to the press with the involvement of former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper. And number three, that Department of Justice prosecutors, the ones prosecuting Flynn, have refused to turn over exculpatory evidence to the defense. In other words, they have a lot of evidence that would exonerate the general, and they've refused to turn it over. So 4 days after President Trump's inauguration, on January 24th of 2017, Strzok met with Flynn in what Flynn viewed as a meeting of two colleagues. I've told you about this meeting many, many, many times. They were trying to set up the White House. They were just getting settled, moving in, you know, putting things in their desks. And General Flynn had worked with Peter Strzok and other agents because it's a transition. They have to make transition between one administration to the incoming administration. And they've developed some sort of a relationship, so they call him casually and ask if they can come over and check with him or talk with him. He has no idea he's going to be interviewed. He doesn't get an attorney. He thinks they're going to be talking about more of the transition or things he needs to know as the national security advisor. So he welcomes them in. One agent takes notes. One agent does not take notes. And so Strzok met with Flynn in what Flynn viewed as a meeting of two colleagues, but which Strzok was using as part of a criminal probe against him. In December 1st, 2017, Flynn pleaded guilty to making false statements regarding his conversations with Russia's Ambassador Sergei Kislyak. I'm just getting started here. This is just unbelievable. So just please, I hope I can make this clear. The filing says that the government sat on explosive evidence about Strzok, former FBI lawyer Lisa Page, and others in the Bureau until the day after Flynn pleaded guilty. The day after Mr. Flynn's plea, the press exploded with the news of Strzok and Page's prolific text messages, their affair, and their malice toward President Trump. The inspector general issued a rare statement that he was investigating the entire matter. Bruce Orr, the fourth highest-ranking member of DOJ, was demoted, and Judge Contreras, who was the FISA court judge, who accepted Mr. Flynn's plea only days before, was suddenly and inexplicably recused. We don't really know about all of that reason, but we do know that we find out he was a friend of Agent Strzok. We also know later, I'll add this to the pile, we know that Strzok and Contreras, and I forgot the other couples, had a dinner party when all this was taking place and got together in one of their homes. That's what good friends they were. So back to this article. Sidney Powell's filing says, not only did prosecutor Brendan Van Grek, the one prosecuting Flynn, not disclose a single text message before Mr. Flynn agreed to plead guilty, but special counsel apparently managed to control the press on the issue until General Flynn's plea was entered on December 1st, 2017, in Judge Contreras' court. It defies credulity to suggest that it was only unlucky for Mr. Flynn that the story broke the very next day. Now, let me go back to the details of the meeting, the supposed place where Flynn lied. Strzok did not take any written notes during the interview, while a junior agent did. Strzok later wrote lengthy notes after the fact. Eventually, Strzok summarized the interview in a 302. We've told you that that is what FBI agents use routinely to record their interviews with suspects or just people, witnesses, whatever. It can't be entered in a court of evidence, but it is their memory of what took place. All right, so he summarized the interview in a 302. And then that 302 that Strzok summarized became evidence for false statements. Yet their own notes contradict the 302 and fail to support it in all other ways. She goes on to detail how they moved around General Flynn's responses and made it sound like he was answering a question that was never asked in the interview. When you compare the two, the original 302 has never been released. That's another point Sidney makes. Plus, there's more. I can't rush through it, so just stay tuned. I just have to, and this is all of this while Comey's claiming, I can't imagine, you know, what it is they have against us. I am, you know, let them tell everything. I'm sure the American people will completely support us when they know what we actually did. Well, I'm going to tell you what they actually did in one instance, and just this instance. Imagine the rest, if you will. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
But if you show partiality, you are committing sin and are convicted by the law as transgressors. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Senator Josh Hawley has filed the HIRE Act, which would move 90% of the federal bureaucracy away from D.C. It would move the Department of Agriculture to Missouri, the Department of Education to Tennessee, the Commerce Department to Pennsylvania, the Department of Energy to Kentucky, HHS to Indiana, HUD to Ohio, the Department of Interior to New Mexico, Labor to West Virginia, the Department of Transportation to Michigan, and the VA to South Carolina. The Agriculture Department move alone would save taxpayers $300 million over 15 years due to lower real estate prices, lower cost of living, and increased employee retention.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
This week on Truth for Life, we're coming to the end of the Pastor's Study and beginning a new series called Shaped by Grace. It's an in-depth look at Romans 12 and how the gospel transforms our lives. Listen all this week to Truth for Life with Alistair Begg.
Truth for Life, weekday mornings at 11:30 Central on AFR and online at AFR.net.
Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Christian parents are on the hook today because they have to identify the threats to the value system that's being taught to their children in public schools. And their job is to protect their kids from these influences.
Tune in for Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson, weekdays at 6:30 a.m. and 9:30 p.m. on American Family Radio.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to our program. God's blessings to you all.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Jeffrey Younger is a 7-year-old boy in Texas whose mother insists he is a girl and wants to give him puberty blockers, which is a form of chemical castration. His mother is subjecting him to a form of child abuse which will damage him physically and psychologically for the rest of his life. His father, on the other hand, wants him to be what God made him to be, 100% boy. While a jury gave sole custody to the mom, a judge said the father would have a say in what happens, but that'll just put them right back in court. God has the solution here. He has created just two genders, male and female, so the boy is a male and not a girl. And God has created man to be the head and final decision maker in his own home and family. This concept was once honored in our laws and should be again. In God's economy, this is not a judge's call, it's a father's call. Problem solved.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. America achieved an important victory over the Islamic State yesterday with the elimination of ISIS's founder, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. Commander-in-Chief Trump deserves credit for ordering such a dangerous mission, second only to that earned by the heroic special operators who executed it flawlessly. Two facts must temper our celebrations, however. First, al-Baghdadi was reportedly en route to Turkey to gain safe haven for his family. That should remind us the Islamist Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is an enabler of ISIS, not a reliable partner in destroying it. Second, other Sharia supremacists, including some tied to ISIS, are now far advanced in setting up a vast new caliphate in Nigeria. Potentially a far richer and more dangerous one than al-Baghdadi's. We must defeat such violent groups and their stealthy counterparts at home as well as abroad, not just neutralize their leaders. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The origins of the investigation and William Barr, who seems very comfortable meddling in the investigation being run by the U.S. attorney from Connecticut.
I can't tell what's going on with the attorney general and that investigation. I was deeply concerned by some things he said early on about using the word spying and saying there are things that just don't make sense. And at the time I said, that's not the way pros operate. If there's a reason to look at something, you shut up and you try and gather the facts and then share the facts with us. And I still feel that way, that I don't know what they're looking at, and so I'm not really in a position to say you shouldn't investigate. Okay, if you're going to investigate, investigate. John Durham is someone who has a strong professional reputation, someone I've for years thought was an excellent prosecutor. I can't tell what's going on with the Attorney General. I would hope that Mr. Durham will do everything possible to protect his reputation from being damaged by those in leadership. And the most important way he can do that is give us transparency.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. James Comey, former FBI director with Nicole Wallace of MSNBC. So he's basically saying, she said, of course, that William Barr, the Attorney General of the United States, is happy to meddle in the investigation of John Durham. William Barr is in charge of the investigation. He's the Attorney General. He appointed John Durham. Of course he's meddling. That's his job. And then, of course, then we have the warning. If you wondered if Comey, and he's so convincing, if you wondered if he's as slimy as I'm indicating, think about what he just said. That's a warning to John Durham. I hope he doesn't, like, ruin his reputation by, you know, cooperating with this. William Barr has as stellar a reputation as John Durham and certainly as James Comey. And in fact, so much so that you may recall that I was really concerned about William Barr's appointment because I thought he was too much part of the D.C. establishment, which he is. He has a resume that would make either of theirs pale by comparison. But now suddenly he's the odd man out because he's, you know, he's gone rogue. And I hope that John Durham doesn't ruin his reputation by, you know, associating with this William Barr who's meddling with his investigation. It's just bizarre. It really is bizarre. It's pretty scary. But it seems to me that the wheels are coming off the bus. And I want to go back to this Daily Caller article by Luke Rosiak, which we will post on our Facebook page. Listen, it's worth the read. If you ever wonder if James Comey is who he says he is, read this article, because this all happened under him. What they did to a hero, an American hero, Lieutenant General Flynn, is a disgrace. It's just an incredible disgrace. And he almost has gone to prison. I don't know what's going to happen here. I don't know if the judge will take Sidney Powell's cues and do what she's asking, because the judge came down on General Flynn very hard, what, 4 or 5 months ago? Called him a traitor in the courtroom. It was bizarre and very upsetting. And I think, this is just a hunch on my part. I think the judge, you know, watches CNN and actually thought Lieutenant General Flynn was a traitor to his country, cooperating with the Russians, and didn't really know himself the truth. But now, thanks to Sidney Powell, I think the judge probably has more information than he had before. She is alleging that this prosecution from the Justice Department has withheld evidence. She's alleging that the FBI, Peter Strzok, is the one who did this interview, supposedly, where General Flynn allegedly lied. Remember, James Comey said in an interview that the agents that interviewed him didn't think he lied. They said that. And then they went back and said they think he lies. And then General Flynn ended up pleading guilty because, as I recall, he had already lost his home, and they were this is not hard to imagine now, is it, if I tell you that the deep state was in after his son, and General Flynn was trying to save his extended family and thought the whole thing would be over. It was bankrupting him to try to defend himself if he pleaded guilty just to get it over with. And that's my understanding of what took place. And so Sidney Powell comes in, and General Flynn fires his team, and Sidney then gets in there and starts digging. And these are the things that she's found. So we know the judge in the FISA court who heard General Flynn's guilty plea was a personal friend of Peter Strzok's. He was finally recused from the case, but not before he allowed General Flynn to plead guilty. Now, it doesn't get any better. It does not make the FBI look good here. In fact, it's really pretty stomach-churning. Okay, so the notes, the 302s I told you about, their own notes contradict that 302 that Peter Strzok went back and wrote and failed to support it in all other ways. Notes by both agents state that Mr. Flynn does not remember making 4 to 5 calls to Ambassador Kislyak from the Dominican Republic where he was on vacation, but that if he did so, it was because the phone service was poor and the phone calls kept getting dropped. The final 302 states the opposite. Do you get that? I told you, I remember telling you some of this. You might not remember that he was on vacation after the election, taking a break before he stepped into the White House to take his job as National Security Advisor. So they start calling him down there, and I did not know that the phone kept dropping. That part I didn't know. But I remember they started asking him questions about things. He said didn't have any notes. He didn't remember about his conversation. He had been calling, you know, dozens of world leaders and ambassadors to try to establish relationships. And so they were asking him, they had the transcript of his phone call, and he did not. He just had his memory, plus the clutter of all the other things that were on his mind. So they call him down there. The phone is dropped several times, but this is what the final 302 says about that. Flynn remembered making 4 or 5 calls that day about this issue, but that the Dominican Republic was a difficult place to make a call as he kept having connectivity issues. This dramatically demonstrates the wrongheadedness of allowing a 302 to create a federal felony. That's Sydney's words. In other words, she's saying the 302 notes don't really explain that. And it was a matter of connectivity, not that he was trying to connect with the Russians 4 or 5 times that day to talk them out of responding to President Obama's, sanctions or something that he had demanded in the last, 4 days of his presidency. 2 out of 4 of the alleged false statements in the statement of offense are based on what the agents claim Mr. Flynn said or did not say about the response of the Russian ambassador on 2 separate issues. Even how Strzok informed Flynn about the nature of the interview was misleading. Flynn was told investigators were seeking to learn the nature of any links between individuals associated with the campaign in Russia. But he asked no questions, Strzok did, asked no questions related to election interference or coordination between the campaign and Russia. Instead, he asked what Flynn had discussed with the Russian ambassador on the issue of sanctions. And when Strzok already knew exactly what Flynn had said because the conversation had been wiretapped. So they ended up moving around one of the questions and answers. So it looked like General Flynn answered a question that was not even asked. And so Sydney goes on to say, since January of 2017, the government knew but still has not disclosed the full statements and notes that show Deputy General Attorney General Sally Yates said the interview of Mr. Flynn was, quote, problematic, and that she was, quote, unclear why the FBI was investigating or interviewing Mr. Flynn at all. Now I've got to skip down because I'm not going to get through all of this. So what happened was we have now text messages between Strzok and also McCabe talking about how they might get in to interview McCabe. And this the dossier then came out in between all of this. And they make this statement, whether now can this give us a pretext to go interview some people. And one of those people was Lieutenant General Flynn. Can you catch that word? Can we use this as a pretext to go interview some people? Strzok texted. And in the next few weeks, there were many meetings between Strzok and McCabe to discuss whether to interview National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, and if so, what interview strategies to use. It goes on and on. There's a lot more. So then the Washington Post columnist that Clapper told to take the kill shot when they leaked this phone call to him, Washington Post columnist David Ignatius wrote that, quote, according to a senior U.S. government official, Flynn phoned Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak several times on December 29th, the day the Obama administration announced the expulsion of 35 Russian officials as well as other measures in retaliation for the hacking. You get that? You do get that, right? The phone, it was bad phone reception. He wasn't like desperately trying to talk to the Russian ambassador to make some sort of a nefarious plan. That's just completely false. And then it goes into the former University of Cambridge professor Stephen Halper, how he organized an event at his college and invited General Flynn and tried to set up what they hoped would look like an untoward relationship with him and Cambridge academic Svetlana Lokova, a Russian woman, who later came out and said, there's nothing between General Flynn and I. And yet they tried to make it look as though they tried to discredit him in that way also. It's just, it is so wicked what they have done to General Flynn. And that was the FBI, and it was under the leadership of Mr. Perfect, James Comey. And actually, I want to play one more of those clips with Nicole Wallace when he's asked about if the Mueller report was intended to be used as a platform for impeachment. And he is very candid. Let's listen. Clip 5.
Do you think that Mueller and people on his team expected that report to trigger the commencement of an impeachment inquiry?
I do. Yeah, I think they make clear that they're laying out the obstruction pattern for 2 reasons. First, for future prosecutors. They actually essentially say that, which is really interesting language. That is, we can't charge this person now. We want to collect all this so that, is the way I read it, when he can be charged, the evidence has been gathered, and second, so that the constitutional responsibilities of Congress can be discharged. I forget the exact language, but that's the gist of it.
Yes, and so there you go. So he's admitting that the Mueller report was made to be a basis of impeachment, to hand off information necessary to Jerry Nadler to then march on in the House of Representatives and impeach this president. And the other wrinkle that came out, these are so many big stories. This is also a big story. Federal Judge Beryl Howell granted the Judiciary Committee under Nadler access now to the Mueller grand jury material. And let me quickly say to you that Beryl Howell is an Obama appointee. She's also a very close friend with the lead prosecutor on the Mueller team, Andrew Weissman. And so she's demanded now that all this information from the grand jury, which is always kept secrets, never released, that it be released to Gerald Nadler. But the problem is that information, there's nothing in there that defends the president. All the investigations were conducted to set up the basis for impeachment. So none of it's going to be flattering to the president. It's all going to be damning. And that's why this judge has ordered it released. But we do think the president will appeal to, or the DOJ will appeal to the D.C. Circuit. So we'll see what happens with that. But there's one more story I want to tell you before we go today. Fred Flights, our friend Fred Flights with the Center for Security Policy, was on with Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo, over the weekend. And I want you to hear this. This is clip 10.
A leak is when someone tells me something and I can't say who it is.
Let's talk
Not
about
when Taylor
okay,
this goes and puts his name in a sworn statement.
Okay.
But I got to go. I'm out of
How about
time.
The CIA whistleblower? Can we talk about that?
I don't think he's necessary. I think he's irrelevant.
I've heard the name. CNN has the name.
Yeah.
The White House has the name. House Intel Committee has a name. Who's this guy being protected from? The American
the
people.
The statute.
The American people.
The statute. No. We protect whistleblowers
he's
for a reason.
He's not being protected
what
from
I'm
anything.
Saying,
he's being hidden from the
He's
American
also being
people.
Protected from the president.
No, the president knows who he is.
I don't know that.
CNN has a name.
I don't know that.
One American News has a name. Breitbart has the name. We should talk about this right now.
I don't know. Here's all I'll say. I'm out of time. I'm not running from this. You're always happy to come back.
Okay.
I don't even think you need the whistleblower. I think it's a red herring. I'll take
but
these.
But Adam Schiff said we were going to have him on. What happened?
If they do it, they do it. That's not.
They're hiding him. They're hiding
him because
you
of have
political
real people.
Bias.
That's
this
for Schiff. I don't know that he has political
reasons.
Bias. I know that the guys who are going there now are your team, and they should be believed because they certainly can't be a function of bias. Let's see what Morrison says. Come back. Let's talk about
okay,
it.
Okay. Sounds
Fred,
good.
Fred, always appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you for making the case on my show.
Yeah,
here.
So here's the deal. I told you who the whistleblower was, too, last week, and I'll tell you again. It's Eric Ciaramella. That's who we believe is the whistleblower. And the stunning thing about what Fred said just now to Andrew was that the president knows who he is. Everyone knows who he is. Everyone in Washington knows his name. It's Eric Ciaramella. He didn't give the name. I'm telling you the name. Because the point of the left is, oh, no, we can't issue his name because he would be in danger, in great danger. You know, no telling what the president might do to him. And so, you know, of course, he's not a whistleblower. He's a leaker. And this is what we know about the leaker. He was close to Pelosi. He worked with the Biden campaign. He was an Obama holdover for the National Security Council. By the way, Eric Ciaramella was known for leaking. He was expelled from that committee. He was very close to H.R. McMaster, who was a never-Trumper that you heard me harp on forever. H.R. McMaster was the person who held the National Security Advisor position after General Flynn vacated. And he worked against the president steadily. And Eric Ciaramella was right there next to him. And so this is why there's more to say about Eric Ciaramella, but you hear the music. This is the leaker. And the president does know his name, and he doesn't seem to appear to be in any danger. It's just that the press and the left doesn't want to talk about who he is because his ties are so nefarious. And by the way, one more thing. I told you I had a bunch of bombshells. Remember the witness that William Taylor last week that gave such damning testimony, we think, against the president? Turns out he's deeply connected with George Soros. I told you I had a few things to tell you this morning. And tomorrow there will be more. You can be assured. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.